Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Eating Disorder. Tonight, we're going to have our little montage wrap-up finale show. The finale of the season. Please welcome my co-host, Mr. Crazy Legs Conti.
Honored to be here. This is like one of those 80s sitcoms where they just bring everybody back at the end of the season.
Yeah, I was hoping we could do something like on the radio where they have the like the wah-wah-wah, you know, like the dream, the dream
exactly.
sequence where they
exactly.
set it in.
Yeah, I can just spin the microphone around. I know that's not going to be great for the listening audience at home, but
you'll
be cued in.
As long as it works
Emmanuel
for us.
Lewis will show up at that point.
Spiro, tonight, the Reverend Spiro is not with us. He is taking care of a sick friend. He's such a good guy. And we have Orla Clark, who is joining us, stepping
Hi.
In.
I'm playing the role of Sparrow this evening, but I'm here for the drinks.
Thank you for sitting in for me last week. Of course, I missed the episode with the porn star.
As did I. I think that was designed by the Reverend to make sure that you and I were not here.
Yeah, I know.
When
yeah.
he did porn and food.
He wanted James Dean all to himself.
Yeah, urban foraging. Everybody get down.
I know, exactly.
Eat some grass and dandelions. Oh, but we have a porn star. You guys aren't going to be here for that one.
And you didn't even hear what was said off air.
Ooh.
So there was stuff learned.
Can I get that bootleg on cassette?
I've got
like
the
what?
Cliff
what
notes.
Did we miss? This
no.
is, this
no,
is
I'm
a
lying.
Montage episode.
I'm totally lying. I've had some drinks. I'm just going to lie for the entire
you've
show.
You've only had two sips so far. I know it's a strong drink,
that
though.
You've seen.
Take us Ooh. To the dream sequence and bring us back in time of what happened with you and James Dean with 3,000 oh. miles between you. He's hung,
oh,
but
my
he's
God.
Not that
is that
hung.
The time? I have to go, guys. Sorry.
We also have St. John Fritzl from Fort Defiance. Welcome, St. John.
Thank you, Paul. Good to be here.
You sat in on a couple of shows this season.
I did, yeah. There was like a bartender tell-all show, and that was a lot of fun. Yeah, did that one and then did another one with you guys.
And what did you bring with you tonight?
I brought a couple of cocktails. I brought Orla's favorite, the bourbon milk punch. I brought that just for you. And I brought sort of the signature drink of our tiki night. Every Thursday, Fort Defiance transforms into the Sunken Harbor Club. And this is sort of our signature drink for that night. It's called the White Zombie.
The White Zombie.
I am drinking the White Zombie, and I have to say it is phenomenal. I don't know if you can reveal what's in it. I'm getting a lot of like that beautiful feeling of like bare feet in fresh cut grass. I'm not saying you mixed the drinks with your bare feet, but I'm getting a lot of beautiful sort of floral and some green.
Wait,
stuff.
Were you roofied?
Like, no, I can neither confirm nor disconfirm that I was drinking till 6 a.m. So the White Zombie potentially has the is both the cure and cause of my hangover.
Did you
at
pass
the moment.
Out in the park this, last night?
I saw the sun come up. The post was already available, but I read my library book for a half hour and thought about bad life choices.
Then you didn't the you didn't drink enough if you
Probably
went
not.
Home and read.
Well, this one's true. Got it's got pisco in it, rum. Gin, a little bit of absinthe, because why not? That's where some of the grassiness and mintiness comes from. And passion fruit and some other stuff. Limit two per customer.
Wow, nice. Yeah. Now, the Pisco, there's some argument about which Southern American country lays claim to it. Is that true? Or?
It's Peruvian.
Peruvian.
And sorry to all the Chilenos all out right. there, but it's Peruvian.
Peruvian
and also,
Pisco.
Like you took away their coastline and or their you know
and their quinoa.
You made life hard for Peru. Let them have their
all right.
Pisco is.
And
I
we
say.
Should say it's Pisco, not Pruno, which I had some no, excellent from the penitentiary the other night. Cell Block 4 is really stepping up
Hooch.
Their mix. They know mixology has come to the state penitentiary.
Exactly. Everything's now, better when made in a toilet.
Absolutely. And which brand absinthe do you use? I'm curious.
We use. Pernod Absinthe.
Oh, okay, so a classic,
school.
The
yeah.
French. Because when America resumed its absinthe sales, Lucid got in early. I'm not a huge fan of that. I like the Kubler, which is
That's a nice
Louisiana recipe, but a Swiss-made absinthe. And then St. George Vert out of Northern California, a little more brandy-based.
Yeah, it's very good. It's very different than the rest.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. And that's the same, I think, distiller as Hangar One. But I would collect absinthe over the years, and I had about 30, and I did an absinthe taste test with a bunch of people. And later that night, I got kicked out of the Guar concert.
Oh,
so the tipping point for drinking absinthe.
What, you weren't vomiting enough blood?
It was impressive. Yes, I landed on the Irving Plaza sidewalk, and I thought, you know, maybe the absinthe taste test was not. I didn't need to taste all 30. I could have stopped at 15.
My only experience with absinthe involved having a boyfriend the night that I drank it for the first time and not having a boyfriend the next day. It did not go well. Okay.
So I used to drink a lot in New Orleans, but I don't remember much because it was all like homemade crap. Yeah. That, you know, like we were loading it up with all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah, we were doing shots of green chartreuse and Jägermeister too, so yeah. You know,
with the alcohol content in absinthe now is like 66 to 69%.
That's
pretty
right.
Strong.
Yeah,
so you know, New Orleans, I'll take a Sazerac, but do you at your bar, how do you serve your absinthe when people want to try it out? Is there ritual involved?
No, you know, we don't do any absinthe service like that. I mean, we use it to mix with, and we use it like bitters, really. And if you read the old cocktail books, you know, a lot of the recipes call for a dash of absinthe or two dashes of absinthe. And that's why we use the Pernod. It may not be your favorite for drinking, you know, with water, like louching it the classic way. But it does have a nice bitter edge to it that really comes through in mixed drinks, and that's why we use that one.
Well, the white zombie is absolutely delicious. And
thanks, Crazy
Legs. You know, honestly, if I had to, this would be the only drink I would choose to drink today at whatever hour. I'm 12 hours away from my former drinking morning, so I feel good.
You must be a little bit jet lagged. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you've been doing
absolutely.
Over the past week?
So I just returned Major League Eating as a competitive eater for the last 13 years in 2009, which was a rough eating year for me. They partnered with Navy Entertainment, and I've been fortunate to travel on 6 tours where we actually entertain the troops, mostly sailor soldiers from the Navy, but all members of the armed forces. We've toured the USS Fitzgerald, ate hard-boiled eggs there against the CO, the USS Ohio submarine, the nuclear submarine. We've done bases from Gitmo, turned it into Eatmo one Labor Day many years ago. And this trip was to 4 bases in Japan, so we did Sasebo, Okinawa, Atsugi, and Yokosuka. And since I knew I was coming back to eating disorder, I thought I needed a specific kind of food memory from each place. In competition, we do a pro-am, and we're partnered with...
I forgot. This is a food show.
This is a food show.
Yeah,
and
I forgot
about that. So Yokosuka is famous for kaiten sushi, the sushi go-round. Not as exquisite in terms of... decor, but function. These are the conveyor belt that's going left to right. And Yokosuka, for the show, I had a beautiful piece of conger eel, which
nice.
Looks a lot
that.
Like Gene Simmons' tongue, but has it's almost as if a loose squid and a firm eel had mated, and you get a pretty nice texture there.
So that is a lovely image for those of you sitting at home having your Sunday supper.
Exactly.
Loose squid.
Yes. So and then in Sasebo, which is the first place that America established a base, it's on the southern part of the island, known for sea bream and oysters, which were out of season, unfortunately. In 1950, American soldiers wanted a hamburger. So what they got was sort of a Japanese version of an American hamburger. It's known to this day as the Sasebo burger. It's an oversized patty, oversized bun, an egg, a little curry sauce, some strange kind of bacon-ham hybrid, and then some sort of special sauce. And it's made by these elderly Japanese women who are all dressed as Dolly Parton. Cowboy hat.
Of course they are.
Delicious burger.
Giant Hello Kitty heads.
Exactly. And then Okinawa is known for soba. The Okinawan soba has egg. It's mixed up. It's a nice firm noodle. And I had.
Did they get the memo that ramen is really cool?
Yeah, they've covered the bases on ramen. In fact, on this trip, I was with Adrian the Rabbit Morgan. He's from New Orleans. Michelle No Leftovers Lesko, who's from Tucson. So I wanted to introduce them to my love of ramen. And we did hit each place. We hit ramen. And really, Atsugi had the best. Atsugi has a place called Ra Ra Ramen, which doesn't sound traditionally Japanese, but the tonkatsu, the bone marrow broth, the pork broth, wonderful, you know, handmade noodles.
What were you eating in the competitions?
We did mostly Nathan's hot dogs in three of them.
Really? On every one? So four times in a row?
No, we actually we got barbecue sliders in Sasebo, which was a nice pork barbecue sliders were a nice change of pace. And in fact...
you do those the same method? You dip them in the water?
You know, we went no dunking on those because
and
we didn't want to...
How many can you do again?
Usually with the pork sliders, I'm good for low... 20s in 10 minutes, maybe a little more. But we do team eating.
Wait, in 10 minutes?
In 10 minutes. And then in the team eating, but here's the deal. Phenomenal. Michelle Lesko, who weighs 110 pounds, petite girl, she, in the last two competitions, she ate 20 hot dogs and buns in 4 minutes.
Jesus.
And then stopped.
Is she
and
single?
Helped her. Yeah, she's single.
Nice.
She, you know.
I would be nervous about that if I was a man. I would be like, nice. I'd be like, ah, there's nothing left.
Oh.
Done.
Done. The next night, she did the same thing in 3 minutes, 20 hot dogs and buns in 3 minutes, and then she helped her servicemen, you know, just casually eat the rest, putting mustard. I'm about to say putting mustard in his dog, but, you know.
But I'm bum. Helping was, the service.
Yeah. So, but it is true. There are a lot of illusions.
She spent the rest of the night helping
Joey
the
Chestnut,
servicemen.
You've got to figure.
I'm just going to put some mustard on your
Joey
dog.
Joey Jaws Chestnut, 69 wieners in 10 minutes, and he's got to do the buns, too.
I think that was a James Dean film.
Absolutely. We missed out on the porn one, so I bring it up now. But I always excel more at the yonic foods than the phallic foods.
I'm that's the same.
That's why I do the oysters. So, yes. So,
that's your stag reflex.
I can only get 26 wieners in my mouth in 10 minutes. So.
Oh, you
hey
amateur. Amateur.
But it was a great trip, and I took lots of photos of weird Japanese food and Japanese sewer covers, and I promised to learn Instagram in the off season.
We're going to look at those photographs now, so just talk amongst yourselves.
Crazy things. Did any servicemen show any real potential?
You know, it's interesting you should ask that, because a lot of times Major League Eating will buy decommissioned military surveillance and they'll turn it towards buffets and places worldwide because they want to keep tabs. And we met with the Shadow Hawks, who are they call themselves the tech geeks or the nerds of the Top Gun world. They fly the same planes, but they have the best radar jamming equipment in the world. No one, even though they get made fun of by the Mace Lords and the Warlords, the Royal Mace and the Warlord Squadrons, because they only have one bomb. But no one's going to fly without them because the Shadowhawks can jam all the radar. And I asked, do you guys have, you know, how do you listen to radio? Can you pick up signals? They said, we have our own. We call it Growler Radio because it's F-18G.
Sorry, Growler.
No, Growler.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tell them what a Growler is. No, it's not a plane.
No,
hold on.
No.
Let us interrupt you for a second.
It holds beer? No, what do we got?
No. It makes me laugh over here quite a lot because a Growler, where I'm from, is a very nice name for a vagina.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So whenever I see, like, the Growler store.
Well, I got to see the largest flying vagina.
Growler.
I saw it land.
Growlers to go.
Yeah.
So growlers to go.
So they
Growler of the day.
Fill your own growler.
Amazing.
There's a pub in the financial district that is actually called the Hungry Growler.
The Hungry Growler. All right.
And I went there with another Irish person, and we just couldn't even function.
Wow.
Because everything on the menu is like the slow and quick growler.
Oh.
The enjoy yourself growler.
The dirty growler.
Yeah, the dirty growler, the clean growler, the quick growler.
That's like a lot of growlers.
Growlers for days.
Well, these growlers played music without an echo, which I think is an advantage.
Like most
growlers. Wait, are you saying her growler echoes?
Yeah, Sweet
Caroline.
I feel
like if your growler's echoing, you need to up your key.
This is why I needed reminding before that this is a food show.
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, but, you eat it.
Oh, my. No more bourbon milk punch for the producer.
You want a refill there?
Yes, I do.
This is why we can't have anything nice.
But we did have, so in the Shadowhawks was a guy named Mongo Matson who had won.
Was he like Maverick?
He was...
You're dangerous.
He was Maverick and Goose combined. I mean, he had the the ebullient nature, but also with the body type, and he looked good in the flight suit.
How you just made that sound so poetic. Like, yeah, Top Gun just went somewhere. I'm like, I need to Google what some of those words mean, but it sounds incredible.
You should hear me talk about Fletch. It's a master's course of the,
nice.
From the dictionary.
Next week on Eating Disorder, we break down Chevy Chase.
Oh, yes. Chevy Chase's career and the food that he ate off camera. But Mongo was a natural. We did a rib and chicken wing eating expo. He didn't get any sauce on his flight suit. And he said, all right, well, I got to, you know, fly the plane in a couple hours. And we said, shouldn't be a problem. You should be able to digest, you know, what you had.
With a name like Mongo.
Yeah, absolutely. And
It makes me think of the guy in Blazing Saddles.
Well, I think that's where they got the name from. He was a big guy. He hadn't punched any horses in Japan, as far as I know. And it was great. The Shadowhawks, an amazing squadron. When a plane lands, this is what I learned. We watched it. We were about 100 feet from it. A guy comes out with a long pole and a black brick, and he starts rubbing the cockpit glass. And at first,
why does everything sound dirty?
I know. And at first, I was like, what? The squeegee guys have come to Japan? What's going on? But apparently, that's static, and they have to remove it. It's so much static that if they open it, the pilot will eject.
Really?
Like 100 feet in the air.
See, if I had that job, I'd just be opening it without removing the static.
You just want to see the pilots
like,
get ejected?
Let's see how high he can go.
So it was great. It was a great trip, and I'm glad to be back, and I look forward to, you know, we get another season coming up in a few weeks.
Fingers crossed. Maybe not after today.
And on that note, let's take a quick break for station identification. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Save the Musician by Black Truth Rhythm Band on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I work in my night and day, making music for the world today. I am the man in the town who does make the sound. Look me at the say man, who does be the drum and be the band. I do fulfill a jazz plan. I'm the musician. Save the musician. I'm crying to the nation. Save the musician. I'm crying to the nation. Save the musician. I'm a feeling girl, I'm a. Save the musician. I'm crying to the nation. Preaching in tongues, oh, to say. Telling you what's happening today. Keeping you abreast with time. Make you feel sad. I am the man who does so. The food for your soul.
Since 2001, Heritage Foods USA has sold pasture-raised, antibiotic-free heritage meats to restaurants and homes around the country. Our farmers raise their animals with care using traditional methods guaranteed to produce the very best tasting meat. Our pork breeds include Berkshire, Red Wattle, Duroc, Gloucester Old Spot, Large Black, and Tamworth, and our beef comes from Piedmontese, Angus Akiyushi, Belgian Blue, Highland, Simmental, and Belted Galloway cattle. We also carry a rotation of 24 rare breeds of heritage chicken, seasonal specialties like lamb, goat, geese, and of course, heritage turkeys. Visit us online at www.heritagefoodsusa.com or give us a call at 718-389-0985 to place your order today.
Hey, what's up? This is John Norris, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody.
If you were distracted by the Heritage USA commercial, you should know that it's August. Now is your time to order your Heritage turkey, which I did
if
the other day.
Are you going to pay it on the side for this?
No, I ordered one the other day. It comes at 33 degrees in a container on the night before Thanksgiving. And Thanksgiving to me, I go to dive bars. I drink canned beer.
It's the one day you don't eat when everybody else is eating.
Exactly.
It's,
exactly.
Like
it's amateur hour, right?
It's like it's amateur night.
Yeah. So
I just sit somewhere being really ungrateful.
Fuck those guys. Yeah, yeah. More beer. More bourbon. But I ordered one. So this is an open invitation to everybody that, especially Chef Paul, maybe you can tell me how to cook this bird that's going to come at 33 degrees.
But you better be careful because you might have all of our six listeners show up at your door.
Boom,
on,
done.
Thanksgiving
that,
night.
That guy from
San
Antonio.
I think
San
I'm busy
Antonio?
That night. I can't.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah. Good call there, Oral. Oh, you said at 8:30? Oh, I have something at 8:30.
I'm Irish. I'm grateful 26th. For nothing.
So I wanted to throw this out there, being that we started the season. Well, maybe not the season, but we started our very first show was based on food trends. And food has definitely evolved since then. The trends have changed. What are some of the more recent trends that everybody has been fascinated by or grabbed by lately, aside from just straight alcohol, which we could probably fill a lot of time with?
Well, while I was in Japan, I did notice that the cronut knockoff has hit Japan in a big way.
Really?
Even at the officers' club at the military base, which they import a lot of American things, this was less a cronut and more sort of like a really old biscuit with cinnamon on it.
That sounds fantastic.
So it kind of went whatever the Dominic Ancel goal was of a multi-layered, beautiful, flaky pastry is now a hockey puck in Japan. So the cronut
it's like full of octopus cream or
yes,
something.
Yes, exactly. Natto, the fermented soybeans that just keep extending. So I'd have to say it's jumped the shark over there. I think the cronut is over.
Anyone had a cronut? I haven't.
Yeah,
had
yeah.
One.
I had one on my birthday. I got up. I jogged to the bakery.
I normally really like you because I'm statement
what?
Is
jogging
on my
for
birthday,
cronuts.
I got jogged up and jogged to the
I had to work off the calories before
fancy
I could
competitive eater.
Come on.
All right. They have actually a better pastry there, which is
someone
call it a
carried
DMK.
Me to the bakery.
The DMK, and you don't have to wait in line for it. It's kind of a combination of a croissant and a popover, three in a bag, and they're delicious. So I would say the cronut is a little overblown.
How about you, Sinjin? What's your latest fascination?
I'm really interested in these super specific themed restaurants and bars. Like we just got in Brooklyn, the Shuffleboard Bar called Royal Palms.
Those guys are killing it, though.
Yeah, sure. But it's like there's a too far in one direction, and you become a Medieval Times or a Jekyll and Hyde's. And
that's probably the next thing.
People are really brushing up against Medieval Times. My girlfriend Jen and I went to a fantastic place for my birthday, Decoy, which is the Peking Duck Bar underneath Red Farm in the West Village. One of the best meals I've had in New York.
Really?
And it's basically they serve other thing, but it's a Peking Duck joint. You go there, you pay them $65, and you just ride the ride. It's fantastic.
Do they have them hanging in the window?
No, that was the one piece that was missing from the puzzle. But a service was great. The room is awesome. Drinks are good. Yeah, but it's like, and I like that place a lot, but there are some places that I feel like are crossing the Jekyll and Hyde's line a little bit. If I go to a speakeasy-themed bar now, I really want the saloon bar, you know, the piano player with the sleeves rolled up, and I want everyone to talk to me and jive talk. And I want the full experience. Like, don't half-ass it anymore, guys. Just go for it.
But that's kind of that's definitely faded too. The whole the speakeasy thing, and you know, like the bartenders.
It's faded in New York. It still exists like in lots of places outside.
Or maybe they just got better at it, and you actually don't know where they are now.
Right?
That could be it. Plus,
once
the arm suspenders got sold out, it was really hard to stock those, get those guys in.
The company closed down. There's no more arm suspenders.
I'll take an extra small vest. So.
What do you think about that, Orla? How is
trends? There's only really one trend at the minute because I'm into it. You know, like if something's suddenly available and delicious, I'll be just there to eat it. But the thing that I don't like is how normal sort of comfort food has become like uber fashionable. Like suddenly mac and cheese is $32.
Well, that's been like that for quite some time, the mac and cheese.
Yeah, but particularly I think in the last year, like you don't just get a grilled cheese now. You get like a grilled cheese that went to university and you get, but you know, it's all gotten so ridiculously fancy, and you're like, is this just not beans on toast? I mean,
I see that in the, I agree with you. I see that in the, like, the fried chicken
scenario. Yeah, I feel like you're taking every bit.
So
like,
many more, you know, chicken is being elevated to this, like, this is gourmet fried.
But I think
chicken.
The reason it really annoys me is because it's all those meals that, like, regular families could afford.
Mm-hmm.
So that dinner just doesn't become something that only people with a bit more cash can go out and have.
Mm-hmm.
So when you then start to take, like, really nice family staples that you can go out and feed all your kids and everyone can have a nice dinner and no one has to sell a kidney. When you then take those things and turn them into something ludicrous, so they then the knock-on effect is felt in those sort of
more it's like what they did with all the like all the Super Bowl food when it was elevated apps.
Yeah, are we gonna have like a gourmet nacho place?
Right.
That's what, I mean, it's like all the a lot of the hot trendy restaurants are just kind of redoing themes we've seen before: the steakhouse, the pizzeria, the, you know, the the fried chicken place. It's just, but it these things become trendy. I still say, in New York, you really can't go wrong serving a good burger or a good pizza.
Mm-hmm.
People will continue to line up for those things.
Well, I have some friends of mine that are opening a place, and they went with continental cuisine, which was nice to me because that's the kind of food, like when I was coming up in the 80s, when I started cooking, everything was continental cuisine, and then that went by the wayside and everything became, you know, either Italian or French, and then it became eventually New American. But continental cuisine hasn't been used in a long time, and it's actually kind of nice to get back to that the old school of New York restaurants, how it used to be.
Continental cuisine obviously being what they serve in the hotel before 10 a.m. with the Danish.
Yeah. That's a continental breakfast.
Oh, that's a continental breakfast. Yeah. That's right. I knew there was a difference there. So
cronuts extra.
Yeah, exactly. But I actually I saw a restaurant in Shinjuku in Tokyo that I think we need to bring to New York. It's called the Robot Restaurant. And
yes.
You can look it up. And it's a three-hour show. The bento box is included. And there are like 900 robots.
Wait, wow. I love robots.
And
I don't think people don't really know that.
I didn't know that about you. But
I love
now
them.
You should look this up on YouTube.
I had a tour manager once like buy me two books on robots because he knew how much I loved them.
Is that what all those A batteries in your bag are for?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, it is.
All right, so in the off season, we need to get you to your first trip to Japan and reservations.
Yes.
It's like 6,000 yen, $60 at the robot restaurant. But 3 hours of entertainment, 900 robots,
and also
and
a robot
bento
will
box.
Always agree with you.
Yes, and they have all different kinds of robots. Whatever specific robots you're into, Orla.
Now, what do they look like? Do they look like, are they those weird androidy looking
They
ones
have
where
those,
they, look
they
like,
have
no,
the,
not so much into those. I like the C-3PO's. Square head.
You're not down with the C-3PO?
I do like a C-3PO, but just the ones that look like they have skin. I don't really like
You don't
those
like
ones.
The animatronic?
No, like the alien,
like Norm,
you know, where
and,
it could be a person. I like a
Cheers.
Nice square head.
You want to be sure
rectangle.
It's a robot. So, well, I would be honest, after a couple of white zombies, you may not know if the person you're talking to is a robot or not.
But
so,
that's happened to us all. That's a Friday.
Blade Runner.
Which
Blade
begs
Runner.
The question, is there a bartender robot?
Ooh, that is a good question. I know that the Cheers bars in airports have since failed because the animatronic Norman Cliffs were apparently not as lovable.
It's just not the same
TV
when
show.
They shout out Norm.
Right, exactly.
Norm.
Exactly.
Norm.
So
maybe what we need to do is open a medieval robot bar and have robots joust.
Mm. Oh
I've
my
been
God,
waiting
I
for
love
that my whole
that.
Life.
It's called Katsu. It's like robot battle. They have in the States. You can occasionally see it.
Yeah, I've seen that.
But
around.
Adding food to that, medieval times with no utensils.
Yes,
I think it's a winner.
Robot
I think
Iron
it's
Chef.
Good. Maybe just give them food in a brown paper bag, even let them work them out for themselves.
Well, is it space food though? I mean, should we do sci-fi food like you're eating Soylent Green or something?
Absolutely. Then at the end of the meal, you whisper in their ear what Soylent Green actually is.
MREs.
Be like, you just ate the people from table 14, by the way.
Wow.
Last night's customers.
Yes.
Anyway, right this way, people.
So how's things down at Fort Defiance?
Oh, things are fantastic, Paul. We've had a real nice summer. People have finally figured out where Red Hook is, which is great. We're right on the main drag. I was at an event last night, and I love it when people say, oh, your restaurant's in Ruddock, where is it? I said, it's just go. You'll find it. It's like, right there.
Well, I said not before. That that's where Joey Gallo's from.
Take a left at the IKEA.
Right. It's, you know, four blocks up from the fairway.
I was telling the story earlier that where that IKEA is, where Joey Gallo went to the mattresses.
Really?
Yeah, that's where his buildings were.
They have a lot more comfortable mattresses now than they did back in
Joey
Gallo's
day. There were no Swedish meatballs when Joey Gallo went to the mattresses.
It's my New York education. Every so now and again, Paul puts on his best Brooklyn voice and tells me a story from back in the day.
Yeah.
And then he goes, whacked in Umberto's clam house. Yeah. The end.
There was these guys, there was some mattresses, yada yada yada.
Forget about it.
So people are finding their way down there. I mean, even when I was a kid, it's tough to get there, you know.
It's really not, you know, because I've done the old IKEA bus, you're down there in a second. Yeah,
the myth of it being tough to get there is a lot bigger than the actual tough to get there.
Yeah, my favorite story is I was at a frame shop on Court Street in Huntington or thereabouts, and the woman was like, oh, you run a restaurant in Red Hook? Where is Red Hook exactly? And I was like, come
and
out your front door.
And she owned a business.
On Court Street in Huntington. I said, come out your front door. I will point to it, and you can see it from here. It's really not that hard. But the myth of it being hard to get to has kept the riffraff out for a long time. Of course,
I love it down there.
Us,
it's brilliant down there.
It's like, lovely.
Not now that it's been on eating disorder.
Now it's
the
on
riffraff
eating disorder.
Yeah, now the riffraff is going to hear about it.
Here's a food trend or drink trend that hasn't hit yet. I want to get your opinion on this. So I'm enjoying the White Zombie, and I'm thinking that the equivalent in human form of this is a guy who used to play for the Boston Celtics, Brian Scalabrine, and he's now back announcing Boston games. And I thought, you know what? Maybe if we could somehow get some of Brian Scalabrine's sweat and add it to the drink. And I thought, why not just have all sorts of vintage athlete sweat? And imagine the upcharge. You've got a glass of Chardonnay.
So this isn't so much a trend as one of your own personal
not
fantasies.
Yet. Just not yet. Absolutely.
I have a small bottle of Elvis's sweat.
Boom. See, right there? What drink would we put Elvis's sweat in?
Oh, it would have to be a bourbon, maybe with some peanut butter in it. Boom. I was just reading about this restaurant called Red Hook that opened in Brisbane, Australia. And the breathless...
Yeah, that's hard to
get
to.
Where is Brisbane?
The breathless review of the restaurant included talking about their cocktails like the chocolate peanut butter milkshake. This is all like Brooklyn food, but it's taken this really surreal turn. And they talk about the creaming sodas there.
Ooh. And,
very traditional New York beverage. And not to mention all the chocolate peanut butter milkshakes that we had, chocolate peanut butter bourbon milkshakes that we had before we got on the air. But that's a traditional New York beverage for those of you who don't know out there. And the Kung Fu Duck Tacos, we all love those.
Nice.
Mm, yes.
Just very traditional New York, Brooklyn foods.
I was thinking about that. I was doing some business over in London last week, and we could really take a lot of the things that have hit here and go over there. There's still a lot of stuff that hasn't been tapped into yet.
Oh, yeah.
We can open up our own cronut place over there.
Right.
So everybody likes the sweat, the athlete sweat and the drink idea. That's what I'm getting?
No.
The Chardonnay with Larry Bird sweat upcharge,
$48? The sports sweat drinks and the mustardy wieners all to yourself.
You should start a website, Chris.
A website?
Yeah. Just
Tom Brady's sweat in my cocktail.com.
Look how rude that sounds.
See, have you picked a rock star?
A rock star.
I might be a little better about that.
So what? All right, let's pick... Let's go with Slash. What kind of cocktail?
Yeah, you know what? Scratch that. I said that.
All right.
Jack and Coke.
Jack and Coke? Okay. Yeah.
Or just Jack.
Is there one?
Bottle.
Is there a rock star you like that you feel his sweat would deservingly go in a cocktail?
Listen, I feel like it's nobody in this room wants to drink anyone's sweat apart from you.
All right.
It's got to be right time, right place.
Fair enough.
You're not just going to go in and order it.
I'm going to hang on to that $1,000 yen discount coupon to the robot bar now.
You do that.
So, Sinjin, what would you like to plug before we wrap up this compelling half hour of eating disorder?
Well, I'd like to remind people that Red Hook is, despite what I said earlier, very easy to get to.
It's near Brisbane.
Not Brisbane, Red Hook.
We're at 365 Van Brunt Street. Just go to Red Hook and ask around.
Or book your flights on Qantas.com.
And every Thursday night, you can roll up and have a White Zombie at our Tiki Night, which we call the Sunken Harbor Club.
The Sunken Harbor Club. Very nice.
It'll be Saturday before you remember what you had to do on Friday.
Limit two per customer.
Boom. There
why,
you go.
Why is that? Why is a limit two per customer?
Oh, it's just
Crazy Legs just spent 10 minutes talking about sweat.
I hadn't intended, and that's you why. Notice I'm 3/4 into my White Zombie. You're lucky I didn't finish that thing while we're still on the air. I mean, we did miss the porn
episode. That right
episode.
There is the cautionary tale. Yeah.
After all those years that we spent in New Orleans, are you really cutting people off on two of those?
No, but it's a great marketing gimmick. But I would say, if you do come, Orla, you should tell your date that you love them before you start the White Zombie, so you don't end up, you know.
Wait, I'm telling my date that
well,
I love them?
Yes, well, tell whoever you go with that you love them before you start drinking the White Zombie. You said that you had absinthe once and then you woke up without
a
boyfriend.
Yes, I woke up. Yeah. Well, no, I woke up with my boyfriend. He just wasn't my boyfriend.
Just wasn't the same guy.
Make sure you make your peace with your date before you start drinking the White Zombie.
Yeah, no, I had a very peaceful time.
Crazy Legs, anything that you want to talk about? Are you traveling the world some more?
After 3/4 of a White Zombie, I love everybody. But I'll be in Reno at the Nugget Rib Fest on Wednesday, and I'm going to head to Burning Man. I'm going to do 4 days at Burning Man. I would imagine there's probably a lot of vegans, vegetarians.
Is there an eating contest there, or are you just going to be chowing acid?
I'm eating the day before I go. So,
do you do acid?
No, but if you have some, I'll try it. I figured after 6 pounds of John Akuska's ribs.
Well, because I remember I was fascinated when we did the edible show, and you said that you had never smoked
pot. No, I have White Zombie is my new drug of choice. No, I haven't done a lot of drugs. I was at a fish show, Madison Square Garden. And
I'm sorry?
A fish.
No, no, I heard you. Yeah. I'm sorry.
This past year, and people kept handing me things, but nothing seemed to really take hold. So I ended up smoking a cigar inside the garden. Finally,
just like at the Katy Perry show.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
This guy actually went to the Katy Perry show by himself.
Twice. I saw it in Brooklyn and the garden. Hey, I had a moment with Katy Perry, and that's not the White Zombie speaking. I gave her a little head nod when she was flying around on a big balloon. She gave me one back.
Isn't it amazing that in 18,000 people you got the
I had a moment with Katy Perry. Yeah. And then later that night. Oh, actually, we'll save that for next season.
I'm sure you made all the teeny bopper moms around you very comfortable, too, when they saw you.
Long-haired dreadlock guy with a Grizzly Adams beard.
Drinking scotch
next to their 13-year-old
daughter.
Absolutely, yeah. They were like, wow, I didn't know the late Orson Welles was such a fan of Katy Perry.
And on that note, folks, we're going to wrap it up tonight. Orla, is there anything you'd like to take us out with?
No.
All right, then. Very nice.
No, thanks very much, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks because we're going on hiatus.
Later.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.